What else was I going to announce? I guess that was all. Okay, then for now it's Dave Phillips. Dave, I'm again sorry for the horrible coffee. I promise to improve next year, so I hope you're still awake by now. Good luck.
Okay. I'll actually try to keep this mercifully brief, so I'll... by the way, I would like to mention that if you read the presentation proposal, there was mentioned that I might engage in some magic predictions, but a few things happened to put a stopper on that idea. One, I forgot my magic cap. And two, one of the predictions was that within 5 years we would have a non-crashing demonstration of ardor. And as we know, I am going to risk saying that within 10 years we'll see ardor 1.0. And I think I'm fairly secure in that one. So, so where are we going and why aren't we there yet? Essentially, the presentation proposal is something of a summary of events that have happened since the last LAC, and as I say, I'll keep it brief because really most of you have a pretty good idea of the events that have taken place since the last meeting. Some of those events that are most significant include the presence of ALSA in the 2.6 kernel series. Jack achieving the 0.99 stage. I assume it will reach 1.0 also within the next 10 years. I think that's a prediction. The expansion of the LadSpot plugin collections, and I think perhaps most importantly, a groundswell of real-world usability reports. Again, Paul's demonstration of Ron Parker's use of Ardor, very impressive. And very indicative of the kind of things that are going on. If you read the Linux audio mail lists, then the sheer amount of music being produced by Linux users is becoming very impressive, as is the music itself. Obviously, too, from the concerts and the chill night last night, you can see very clearly Linux has reached a stage where it is usable by musicians, and it's just going to improve from there on. As far as I would like to point out that for the user who is not, say, a Linux audio musician, a common desktop use of Linux audio for listening to those legal MP3s that we all have, and watching videos, and you know, the what I call consumer sound. Linux has improved a great deal, and I'm sure will continue to improve. So even for users who do not have a primary interest in Linux audio, they enjoy the benefits of the progress made in the field. We all know about kernel patches that have given us extremely low latency. So there's just simply more refinement in many of the advances that have been made over the past few years. So we have, I think, a very smooth course in our progress. Also, I had mentioned in the presentation proposal about virtues of some of the 2.6 kernels, and that has also been covered during this conference. Hopefully, and it is a very real hope I have, that within a short time we'll be able to open a 2.6 kernel-based Linux distribution and apply no patches and have superior performance capability right out of the box. I do believe that's possible, and I truly hope that that's where we're headed. There are some other interesting areas that are a bit, I'll say tangential, although in fact they aren't really with regards to what we do here. And in particular, these areas have not been especially represented here, which is why I bring them up. Although the VST, the issue of VST and VSTi support is a hot topic in conversation. I imagine many of you have discussed it with each other here. The mechanisms for VST and VSTi support are dependent upon the WINE project, for those who don't know this. Let me ask a question real quickly. Are most people here aware that, just ask it this way, is there anybody here who is not aware that you can run VST and VSTi plugins under Linux? So as you see, this is a very well-informed group. Well, thank you very much. Are there any questions? The DSSI proposal, the disposable soft synth interface, it would have been nice to have seen a conference presentation on that, but my understanding is that the developers were unable to make this conference. I would like to see DSSI better deployed throughout the development of Linux sound and music software. The API is an excellent API, and the developers are actively seeking contribution and input for its further development. So if you would like to see a native soft synth interface with features that are common to the VSTi world, look at the DSSI API and consider getting involved with the project, please. Another initiative for cross-platform audio and MIDI is the Port Audio Project. I believe the prime mover here is Phil Burke and I think Ross Bencina. I think it would be a good idea to try to include them in future conferences. And I might mention as an aside, more cross-platform awareness is, I think, a very positive issue now, and it's going to become more imperative for us to keep a very open mind about open source initiatives not particularly coming from Linux, or where in which Linux is only one of the platforms addressed by the initiative, again, such as Port Audio. The MIDI share, Graham's MIDI share, is no newcomer to the Linux software world, but it's beginning to see some wider implementation. It's a, if you don't know what MIDI share is, it's a MIDI multiplexing system, somewhat similar to the ALSA sequencer, also somewhat different. And in fact, Albert Graf has written a bridge between the MIDI share and the ALSA sequencer, basically letting anything that connects to the to MIDI share, and those programs include things like Fluid Synth, Common Music, and Albert Graf's Q. Those can all now be routed out to the ALSA sequencer and, of course, then to anything that you can connect to that. And finally, I know, please do not boo, Java. There's no Java. You guys are hopeless. I'm very much aware of the problems that many of us have with Java. Funny though, you didn't boo when you saw the OS X screens. shame on you. I believe that basically what you're booing is Java's licensing issues instead of its audio capabilities. Development in Java audio just keeps going on, and it's not to our benefit to ignore it. There are some fine minds working in it, and there's some excellent software that's been produced in Java, including the JMusic. Gosh, it's almost like a music kit, in essence. JSynthEdit, which is a universal MIDI synthesizer editor librarian. The Java Music Specification Language, JMSL. And the JSyn plugin synthesizer and wired synthesis construction kit. These are actually non-trivial environments and applications, and I think it's to our advantage to sort of try to bring them into the fold. Remember that the developers of this software and this software itself is not Java. It uses Java. But it's not Sun. It's not what you have against Java. They're writing good software, and it does run on Linux. It's quite usable. I want to point out that JMusic and JMSL both include synthesis primitives, integral graphics capabilities, and a very productive user base. A search of the Linux audio mail list indicated that in 2004, only 78 messages dealt with Java. So I would say we're doing a very good job of ignoring it. So, I think one of the things that this conference really emphasizes is how mature the application base has become. What I like to call the low-level and middle-layer base, ALSA in the kernel, and then the development of ancillary software such as libsoundfile, libsamplerate. It's a bit misleading to call Jack something like ancillary software because I believe it's so central now to the development of superior Linux audio software. But all of these projects have attained a very, very mature point. I'm not working on any other platform but Linux, but I have the distinct feeling that we have reached a point of, at least in this low and mid-level software, a point that's at least equal to what is available to developers on any other platform. Some of you here have far more experience with that directly, with working with Windows or working with OS X. And I would be interested to know your opinions about a comparison between, say, our low level, you know, the ALSA base, the libraries such as libsoundfile, and what is available to OS X or Windows. My impression, like I say, is that we have an extremely sophisticated and very usable set of software at that level. For the normal user, that is the normal music user, composer, performer, the mature applications available really have become simply amazing. Many of us here have been using Linux for a long time, and I think can see very clearly that the maturity is sort of right here now. Paul's demonstration of Ardor was kind of mind-blowing, and as you could tell, many people just broke out in spontaneous applause because of the amazing features. Some of those people, I'm sure, are using Pro Tools and kind of scratching their heads, wondering why they spent all that money. So you'll notice that I've chosen a few categories to indicate some of the more mature applications. For hard disk recording and a digital audio workstation, of course, the combination of Ardor, Jack, and the Jam and Mastering Suite is of profound significance to any of us who want to do professional-grade recording. For MIDI, mature programs, of course, include Rose Garden, Musa. Seek 24 is another one, which is really a very cool little program. These Musa and Seek 24 have perhaps not reached a 1.0 stage, but 1.0 isn't the only sign of maturity or solid usability. For editors, we have Audacity, SND, Resound. I think there, I used to be very, very strong about my opinions about sound file editors. I thought we had some pretty good stuff, and I think that those editors are, in fact, quite nice, but I think there's a ways to go by comparison with what's available with Windows, especially some very good Windows sound file editors. Still, programs like Audacity and the others are very usable, very strong already, so I would call them mature. A curious side comment, I teach for part of my living, and I recommend various software to my students, all of whom run Windows. It's interesting that they love using Audacity for sound file editing, and especially for, say, slowing down a passage so that they can work out details of execution. It echoes my concern for cross-platform viability. This is becoming rather important to publishers, to magazines who want to see more. Well, it's nice, it runs on Linux, but does it run on OS X? Does it run on Windows? So again, I would like to encourage inclusive as opposed to exclusive attitudes. For pattern programmers, of course, the amazing Hydrogen, and for soft synths, I wanted to say we have soft synths from A to Z. Do we not? It's often a category that's often sort of left out of the thinking is software sound synthesis languages. Software sound synthesis languages have been with Unix since the 1970s, and Linux is heir to a very great tradition of those languages, including C Sound, C Mix, C Music, Common Lisp Music, and more recently, the latest contender, Super Collider. These are very powerful and very mature environments. So again, the user has at his disposal some truly incredible tools right there. And I cannot fail to mention Lilypond, because the developers have threatened to beat me up if I leave it out again. So for music notation, the most beautiful music notation in the world, Lilypond. Good enough? Yeah, thank you. Okay. I'm safe. I'd also they're tough guys. I would also like to point out that Rose Garden and the Denimo program are fairly functional front ends for a Lilypond. So if the thought of composing music notation in what appears to be something of a scripting language, or simply a language, if that frightens you, there are ways to get into Lilypond without the fear. So, but wait. For composition software, we have the incredible Common Music, multimedia, Pure Data. And remember, these are I'm classing these as mature environments. These are really amazing environments for a musician to use and to get into. PD, I believe, just had its first PD-specific conference. Is that correct? Yes? Yeah. Which itself is really remarkable. That's a large user base for a single program. And once again, a PD runs on Linux, OS X, and Windows, does it not? Yes? So... I would also just like to mention the Beast BSC program. It's not perhaps as widely known or as widely used, but it's a pretty cool program and is reaching its mature state as well. So, well, there are things missing, but I think that there's strong movement towards filling some gaps. The Linux Sampler Project, which, again, I'm sorry, it was not represented here, is filling in the lack of a giga sampler for Linux. Hopefully, we'll see them here next year with a mature application of their own. Reports from people like Mark Connect are very strong. Mark has said it's quite usable, and Mark is a giga sampler user. So Mark's also involved with the Ardor project and is a quite knowledgeable user. So Mark's comments about Linux Sampler imply that it's also reaching a usable state. I believe already has the capacity to import Giga Sampler files, as well as I think DLS and Akai samples. So that's a project which we definitely want to keep an eye on. I mentioned JSynth Edit because for those of us who are still using MIDI hardware, the lack of a universal MIDI synthesizer editor librarian is kind of a pain. Those are really nice programs on Windows. The only one that shows like a kind of advanced usability is the JSynth Edit program. It runs under Java, which itself might be a problem for some users. But it is a very usable program and quite nice for its purpose. We also have a host of smaller, more focused applications, such as Jesse Chappell's Freak Tweak and his Super Looper. In fact, we kind of suffer from an embarrassment of loopers. All of a sudden, it seems like within a week, we went from not really having, you know, many or anything, you know, to shout about, and then all of a sudden there's Freewheeling and Super Looper and K Loopus. So I like that that's coming along. Also, I would like to mention Rui Capella's QJack control, which we just cannot live without now. So thank you, Rui. The ongoing development of graphics toolkits such as GTK and Qt and FLTK has also had a profound effect on the usability of this software as far as the end user is concerned. In particular, I'd like to mention FLTK. It's become a toolkit of choice for a number of smaller applications, but an application like Xinad SubFX can hardly be considered small, and the inclusion of a widget set based on FLTK in a project like CSound can also hardly be referred to as small. So it's scaling pretty well. It's an attractive toolkit, but of course GTK2 and the upcoming Qt4 are just getting better and better as well. It has been in the past a problematic issue for things like common interfaces for, say, LadSpa plugins. I realize that adding one more toolkit to the mix doesn't resolve that, but it appears to be a very easy-to-use toolkit, FLTK that is, and I like that we have it. So, let me go back here. I'd like to say a little more about CSound, just that it's really the complete reorganization of the code has made it considerably more attractive to many users, and I think we have great things to look forward to from that. And in particular, I wanted to mention that real work is being done with it. Ian Duncan has been doing performance work with it with a Linux-based system that he says is just rock solid, never crashes, and his performances are I think 3 and 4 hours at a time. So nice news. There's a user, Brian Redfern, who is composing a television soundtrack using CSound running under Linux. It's a satellite TV show, I think. And according to Rick Boulanger, there are even real, honest-to-goodness Hollywood composers using CSound. I don't think they're using it on Linux, but CSound itself is LGPL'd, open-source software. Nice to have. Let's see, do I want to go this way? Yes. Downside to our increasing capabilities is the increasing complexity of Linux itself. For those of us who began, say, with Slackware, you know, and the 1.2, the stable 1.2.13 kernel, and those some of you have started long before that, you've seen Linux distributions especially are becoming a bit fat, and the evolution of more dedicated distributions such as Agnula, Planet Karma, are just excellent movements towards, or excellent moves towards being what I'll call a sort of domain-specific distribution. And the live multimedia CDs are a really excellent advance as well. So as I say, the contemporary distributions and packages that most have something to do with our purposes include, as we know, the Agnula Dimudi project, Planet Karma. For Mandrake users, there are the Thax packages, Audio Slack, and Fervent Software's Studio to Go, which is a commercial package that's again designed to be put in the drive, and there you go. I believe that these the live CDs have really enormous potential for what I'll call Linux evangelization, and they might be a particular blessing for an expansion of interest in Linux audio capability. So, public awareness. As I say, the software is becoming a real alternative for serious users, people who want to get work done, who want to not really fuss with details. They just want to go straight to the programs and start using it. We are not there yet. As anybody who's, you know, running a Windows system and they get their software and they pop it in and it just works. We also, many of us know that that's not true for them either. They have their problems, but that's what we'll call a mind share. And we're sort of living up to that mind share, that what we need is that it will just plug in and go. But I believe we're getting there. So I won't make a magic prediction on that one, though. So articles on Linux audio software are showing up sort of all over the place now. More public awareness has grown from articles written and published in journals such as the Linux Journal, hard copy and online. I do a monthly column for the Linux Journal online, and the hard copy magazine is currently under the editorship of a man who's very, very, bullish on audio under Linux. Don Marty is the current editor of Linux Journal. Basically, Don wants to see more articles on sound and music for Linux. For instance, he asked me to see if there's anyone here who would like to review some of the new consumer electronics coming out that is Linux-based, handheld players, iPod imitators and all that kind of thing. It's not something that myself, I'm interested in using or reviewing, but they have some money to share, so if somebody wants to get their hands on some kind of neat gear and review it, there's a chance. The Computer Music Journal has published a few things on Linux now, and considering that it's truly, I think, of a core interest to their audience, hopefully they'll do some more publication as well. Daniel James, who unfortunately could not be here, has been writing the occasional article for the English magazine Sound on Sound. Tape-Op, which is an online forum for, I guess, what would you say, home recorders, serious home recorders? I mean,
the Tape-Op home detail is in print as well.
Oh, yeah, yeah, it's both. Yeah, it's Tape-Op is actually two things. It's a it has been up until now a free journal. You just said, yeah, I want a subscription, and they start sending it to you. I'm not sure, they may have a fee now, but they have a number of forums, and there's been quite a lot of interest in Linux. So that's again nice to see it, the interest appearing in domains or in journals that are not Linux-specific. Keyboards Germany has run articles by Matthias Nagorny and Frank Neumann, I believe, yes, yeah. What's that?
Just Matthias.
Oh, okay, okay. And of course, the more general magazine, CT, Frank Barknecht, I believe, has written for that as well. Is that right, Frank?
Yeah.
And of course, we have the Linux Audio Conference, and presence at more general conferences such as the Libre Software Meeting in France and the London Sound Expo in England. So these are good things. As I said, we have more and more music made with Linux. Well, not just more and more music made with Linux, but more and more really good music made with Linux. And that's, I think, one of our guerrilla marketing techniques that we want to really push. I would like to see in, say, the next few years, the appearance of collections of music made with Linux, or if you will, more broadly, collections of music made with free and open source software. maybe really push the fact, or perhaps have an organization such as Agnula Libre Music publish a disc or two of Libre Music. I think that that will help raise awareness at both the public and the commercial level. So, as I say, I would truly like to see that. Of course, some of the high-profile events have been, as we saw during the Ardor demonstration, Ron Parker's use of Linux at Mirror Image Studios. And if you're familiar with Jan Weil's Linux audio blog, you can access a very large list now of music made by Linux users using quite an array of Linux audio software. One interesting, very interesting event, at least to me, was the Brazilian user Chris Cabello and his impromptu recording of Gilberto Gil with Ardor. I believe Gilberto Gil is Minister of Culture in Brazil. That's fairly high profile, so kind of nice. The recording was, you know, sounded like it was in a room with a, you know, $20 microphone, but hey, it's a start. There are things missing here. As I say, this conference does not address some issues that may or may not, you may or may not feel are relevant to the conference itself, but are still important in terms of Linux audio generally. Consumer audio device support, as I say, the iPod-like devices, etc. Telephony. I forget who I was talking to about this, but we were having some real fun thinking about the integration of Jack into Linux-based telephony. You know, there's some real neat possibilities there, running your telephone conversations into Ardor and, you know, jazzing them up and so forth. desktop sound servers, Frank Neumann said, we have too many of them anyway, so if there's some attrition there, that's probably fine. So, again, Jack is perhaps taking a rightful place as the sound server of choice, and I believe Torben's working on a Jack UDP, network Jack. So, one very strong non-presence here were the video developers. I mean, audio is absolutely critical. I mean, you just want to watch your DVDs? No sound? Of course you don't, you know. So Xine, M-Player, the VLAN people, I would like to see them know about us and embrace what they're doing as well. Blender, the Blender people as well. And I kind of just asked myself, well, what about OS X? You know, I mean, sort of do we or don't we? Do you develop for it or not? But after talking with many people here, I have a stronger sense that an open-mindedness towards cross-platform viability generally is a very good thing. So world domination isn't going to come from shutting them out or cutting ourselves off from them. So Ardor is currently running on OS X, is that correct? Hydrogen runs on OS X and Windows. And oh, geez, I made a little list of things. Lily Pond, of course, is cross-platform. There are a number of some of our best applications that are already cross-platform. So this is a good thing, and I would like to encourage developers to consider other platforms as they write their software. So persistent problems and perhaps some solutions. Documentation, I'm going to just breeze right over that as quickly as I can. So, it's a primary issue for new users generally, and not just with Linux Audio, but with Linux generally. So, I don't know really if there's a single solution. I think that we just have to try a lot of different things. The community efforts towards addressing documentation include wikis and some focus groups. Many applications, in fact, do have excellent documentation, but there's still a lack of what I call system comprehensive documentation that sort of plagues the new user. So they get a well-documented program like Lilypond, great, but they still can't figure out Linux, you know, and how it works in the general environment, etc. So as I say, it plagues the new user, particularly when trying to troubleshoot or attempting to optimize some aspect of an increasingly complex system. So the problem is familiar, remains with us, that writing good documentation is a difficult thing, and there are too few good writers with time and energy to spare for the work required. I'm also very positive about the use of wikis to organize community documentation efforts. I talked with Hanwen about their experience with a Lilypond wiki, but it wasn't very positive. On the other hand, I think that the documentation wiki for Ardor is very positive and hopefully will evolve into the documentation source for the program. Perhaps what happens with the Ardor wiki documentation wiki could be a model for other documentation efforts. It's just very hard to find people who can write well, and generally speaking, if you have a professional capability as a writer, you're writing professionally, you don't want to do it for free. It's laborious and very time-consuming, so it's a problem that persists, as I say. Hardware support, well, we all know about hardware support. I wish I could say, 20 more sound card manufacturers got on the boat. I'm not even sure there are 20 more sound card manufacturers, but it's just a persistent problem, and I honestly don't know if there's a single solution. Again, as I say, perhaps more profile with, you know, real-world use, recordings, articles like something covering Ron's studio in Mix Magazine or some other professional studio magazine. Maybe that can bring the hardware manufacturers closer to us. Initiatives like the LinuxAudio.org consortium can perhaps work towards outreach and addressing manufacturer reticence as far as support is concerned. But that, as far as I can see, hardware support remains an uphill road. And perhaps generally for Linux, it remains an uphill road. There is more and more public and commercial awareness of Linux, but it still needs to improve a great deal, I think. Let's see. A couple things I want to mention about going on about the hardware thing. Two items in particular that were not mentioned during the conference, but I think are really deserving of at least some passing notice. One is Lee Ravel's work on the Sound Blaster Live and the Audigy. For those of you who are not aware of it, I think it's ALSA 1.09 now contains a driver that, for those cards, the Sound Blaster Live and the Audigy, that really opens up that hardware. So whereas previously they were not really usable for, say, multi-channel work, for a amateur or a semi-professional home recordist or desktop recordist, suddenly their Audigy and their Sound Blaster Live have real multi-channel support. So I think Lee's done some great work that way. I know that he's borrowed a lot of his ideas and perhaps even some of the code from a Windows project, but all the same, it's very nice to see that hardware really open up and be usable. Considering its low cost, it's a very powerful solution then for desktop recordists. Also, in another way, sort of a great hack was Timo Sivula's El Cheapo how-to, where he hooked together something like 8 PCI 128 cards, I think. You can pick those up for like $5 each on eBay, you know. So pretty easy to pack about 8 of them into a machine and wire them up. I don't know, actually, I won't say it's easy. It's easy to put them in the machine if you've got slots. And as far as actually doing what Timo suggests, I don't know if it's easy or not, but it's quite a hack. So, all right. I would also like to point out something. I want to take a moment if I have it. Have some time? Okay, all right. This is a kind of memento mori. JMAX and Open Music sort of died the death last year. For those of you who are not aware of it, JMAX is now no longer supported, no longer promoted by EarCam, and it would seem that EarCam has taken a non-involve stance with regards to open source software, free software. JMAX was a direct casualty, and unfortunately the Open Music project, which is a very promising project, is a casualty just by being in the same group. However, you know, I might lament their losses, but the fact is that the code bases are still with us. They're both under the GPL, so if somebody did want to pick it up and run with it, they could. However, I don't believe JMAX will be revived merely because PD has become a much superior replacement for it. So. Perhaps some of the more attractive aspects, graphics aspects and so forth of JMAX could be incorporated. But at any rate, if you did not know it, JMAX is no longer with us. And in my presentation proposal, I point out that for project managers at the academic or institutional levels, the history of the rise and demise of JMAX might make for an interesting study. So. To say the least. So, as far as a summary conclusion, from where I sit, as I say, as a musician who uses Linux daily, a very interested user, and also as the maintainer of the Linux Sound Apps pages, the good news far outweighs the bad. Again, also another point to make, say, in terms of hardware, the FireWire demonstration here is very exciting. Very exciting, because up until that demonstration, I think many of us were sort of sour on the idea that we weren't going to have FireWire for a while, but we see it's on the way. And as far as I'm concerned, the bad news can be dealt with in very productive ways. So I'd say just things are pretty good. There's a cartoon character on the web called Strong Bad who announced that he and his people are on the cutting edge of the future. That's us. So, whoops. Oh, dear me. Now I've done it. Well, let's see. Fernando, how did I get it full screen again? The slideshow. Oh, yeah, the slideshow thing. Yeah, that one. Whoa. Oh, amazing. Yeah, but now my arrows don't work anymore. Slower. Okay. And I would just like to extend an enormous thanks to Gitz Deeper and Frank Neumann. I'd also like to point out that if you pronounce Gitz's name correct, it kind of describes probably his feelings about working here during this conference, because it gets deeper. So maybe, I don't know really if I should have said that, but it's a little late now. So, and I would also like to thank Lutke Bremer and just everyone at ZKM, our sound crews, for their assistance and really great hospitality here at ZKM. Our sponsors, Alcatel and Keyboards Germany. To Jörn Nettingsmeyer and Eric Rorke. And for the audio and video feeds, and the reports coming back on the mail lists are really positive. You guys have done an amazing job. The feeds are archived, the streams have been archived, so Some reports are coming in from people that especially the Theora video streams have been really impressive. So thanks to both of you guys. Why?
And by the way, I would like to point out that they truly put in an enormous amount of work on this, so the applause is very, very well deserved. It was a success, and as I say, it reflects an incredible amount of work. And in final, I would like to thank everybody involved with Linux Audio. So give yourself a round. Thank you.
Okay, so Tim Hall from the UK would like to mention that he and Daniel James are organizing the free audio and video event, FAVE, in Bristol, UK on the 20th of August this year. And he would also like to slap you upside the head for both spelling my name wrong and not even bothering to try to pronounce it.
I'll consider myself slapped, all right.
Okay. And then also you had on the telephony on the page of missing things, you had telephony listed, but you didn't mention Asterisk, which is a free open source PBX solution sponsored by Digium, mm-hmm. who sell cards for PC-based PBX solutions. Okay. And I think that's it.
Okay.
Oh, wait, no, I'm sorry. He didn't tell me his full name. Willie from Pisa, he goes by Be Happy on IRC, had a question. Okay. What do you think of the lack of good samplers and sampling tools? The guys on IRC had mentioned that Linux, well, they mentioned, you did mention Linux Sampler,
Linux
but they
sampler
also mentioned Specimen.
Right, Specimen is, to be honest, I think that there's a little bit, I think that there's a great lot of difference between a project like Specimen and a Linux sampler. I think, again, what you need to do is look at something like GigaSampler and, at least to consider its difference, say, between something like the Linux sampler project and Specimen. So, but Specimen is a wonderful program, too.
And somebody just said that they're sounding bells in Rome just to applaud the ZKM team.
Has nothing to do with the Pope, huh?
In Karlsruhe, we have white smoke. White smoke. Dave, I'm sorry, but I won't accept any more questions from the audience here because we're getting late on time, and I want to give you a chance to have your lunch break now so that you can continue with the next part after the lunch break at 1:30. Dave, thanks again for the talk. I'm a bit angry because you stole some of the things we plan to mention later on, but I think we'll redo them anyway. So thank you, Dave Phillips.